Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben.
Presented by Breaks Plus. I'll get to that in a second, but go ahead.
Yeah, when I was doing my internship in the NFL, the first couple times, I was shocked, but then as it went on, I was not shocked about all the decisions that happened that have nothing to do with winning. And how there was dysfunction in organizations that clearly took away from, I thought, this is the ultimate winning business.
Right.
Everyone in this building is supposed to be focused on winning, and they're not.
Right.
And it was just so shocking to me the first couple times, but then I was like, this is just how this whole thing works. We as fans and as players down the locker room, I thought everyone is as dedicated to winning as I was.
Right.
And it's just simply not the
case.
There
are only 32 of these in the world.
And then also just to see not the you know, the laser focus on not winning, but also just the pure dysfunction. So when I hear this about the Rockies, on one hand, I'm shocked. But on the other hand, I go, no, I've seen this before. This is how it works with bad teams and bad organizations. There's a reason why they're bad teams and bad organizations.
Why were the Cleveland Browns so bad for so long? Because they did Rockies-type things.
Yes, new right? coaches, new quarterbacks, turnover, churn and burn, no stability. You know, the owner's off doing other things. He's leaving Mike Holmgren to run the team, and Mike Holmgren's living in San Francisco trying to run the Cleveland Browns. How does that work? That stuff just makes no sense. That's a bad organization.
All right, let's get to question Chad, presented by Breaks Plus. And I'm so glad this question came in because I was going to ask it of you as well. Chad, what is your take on the current college football situation?
Oh, man, this is
And this
chewy.
Is somebody that, let's chew on this for a little bit because you're going to be getting your schedule for calling some games this fall. You'll get your fair share of college football games. You've been calling college football games over the last few years, so you've gotten a sense of what the landscape is like out there. So what's your view of it?
I think it's a bit of the wild, wild west right now. I was just at the Pac-12 media days, and almost every coach was asked about the NIL stuff, and they're like, this is brand new territory. We are feeling our way through the dark with this thing, how to advise these kids, how to keep these kids focused on football, how to keep their heads on. You know, how to deal with jealousy within the locker room. You know, I've got guys who are going to make a couple $100,000. I've got guys who aren't going to make a single dollar. How do we navigate that? So that's one part of it. But then comes out the news last week of Texas and Oklahoma making their application essentially for the SEC, telling the Big 12 they're going to leave. So now we've got conference realignment. We've got players being paid. We've got a lessening chokehold on college athletics from the NCAA. We got all these factors coming together. So I don't know what the next couple of years look like, but I think 5 years, 10 years down the road, we end up with a tier A of college football, a tier B, and a tier C. And a tier A is going to be who you would expect. Texas, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, those kind of schools. Tier B.
How many in Tier A? 16, 20?
Probably 20.
Yeah.
Maybe with the potential to grow to more.
Okay.
And then that Tier B would be also kind of who you would expect. Your Michigan State, your Iowa's, maybe a team from the Pac-12, maybe a USC if they're not up in Tier A, or maybe an Oregon if they don't make it to Tier A. Something like that. And then Tier B, unfortunately, would probably be teams like Colorado. I love the Buffs. I want them to be a Tier A school, but from a money perspective, from a coach's salaries perspective, from the amount of money they can pay analysts, they simply can't compete with those teams I mentioned in
Tier A. They just see conferences going away.
I see the geographic conferences going away and becoming much more of a money situation, a funding situation, and much less of a, oh, here's a nice little geographic, you know, stamp of the country. Let's put all these teams together. Vanderbilt now has no reason to be in the SEC. None whatsoever. You know, you look at the attendance at an Oregon State game. Do they really bring something to the table from a football perspective to the Pac-12? I don't think they do. So there's these teams that don't belong in some of these conferences just from a financial perspective, from a wins perspective. What does Vanderbilt bring to the SEC?
Right. Right.
Nothing. So why shouldn't they be replaced by Clemson? If you're the SEC and you are the dominant player in college football, the biggest sport in all of college athletics, why would you not try to bring in people who can help you grow your brand, not just from a viewership, but also from a footprint across the country?
So let me see if I have this straight. So when you're talking about this tier A, it does not, it's not worried about time zones and geography.
It's not worried about any.
USC on 1 week can be traveling to Tuscaloosa to play Alabama. The next week, Alabama's traveling west to play Oregon, and it's just part of their Tier A schedule.
Miami plays Seattle, and San Francisco had a dominant run as a West Coast team. People always complain about it's hard to go from west to east. I was with the Seahawks. I know that's difficult, but the San Francisco 49ers managed to be very successful with great players, Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, going across the country. So, yeah, let's eliminate the geographic ties. And if I'm the SEC, the next step would be to remove myself from any kind of NCAA restrictions. We got the money. We can pay players. Mm-hmm. Why not have a semi-pro-ish kind of league? So to answer the texter's question, I'm not sure if I've even gotten there.
Yeah.
But how the next couple years play out, I think it's going to be lots of change. How it all goes, I don't know. But I think, again, 10 years from now, my scenario is what I think we end up with, just because that's how the finances are going to work out. And the money drives everything here.
You can see the way it's going. And honestly, the moment that we saw that first big wave of expansion and teams started moving, programs started moving here and there, that's when I stopped really worrying about the romance and the nostalgia of the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the Pac. I mean, it just, the idea that, well, wait a minute, you're telling me that CU could end up in a tier where they're playing a Kansas 1 week and a Syracuse the next week, and there's no real rivalries like we used to have. I just think the days of rivalries in college sports are dying. Dying. And I'm okay with it. I really am, because you know what? They've told us, the programs themselves, along with the networks, have told us that the loyalty to the rivalries that we've loved for so long don't matter to them. Okay, then I'm not going to get caught up in it. Just give me the best football. Give me the best football. Give me the best basketball. And if you're telling me that every single week I can watch the best of the best of college football play. And you know what it also sets up? It sets up something kind of interesting. Almost like as we've been talking about this, almost kind of like a European soccer relegation type thing. You want to stay in Tier A? You got to perform at a certain level. Because
absolutely.
While you're struggling at the bottom of Tier A, here's a team that's excelling at the top of Tier B. Let's move them up. Let's drop you down.
I think that would probably be, if I were designing, that would be an automatic part of it. One team has to leave Tier A every year, and somebody gets to move up from Tier B to Tier A. But I know they were just talking about expanding the playoffs to 12 teams. I think they've got to put all that on hold now until the conferences realign. If there's five teams that deserve to go from the SEC, because Oklahoma and Texas now join that conference and they deserve to go into the playoff picture, and there's no one from the ACC outside of Clemson that deserves to go, then that's how it needs to work out. Mm-hmm. So this conference realignment, I think, kicks that 12-team playoff can down the road. Or if they move the 12-team playoffs, then it can't be any caps on amount of teams from any individual conference.
Yeah, the thing I like about it, too, is it forces these big fish in the small pond type programs to all of a sudden have to step out and contend with bullies of their same size every week. You know the best thing about this? It's going to force high and mighty, haughty Notre Dame to join a tier.
Because
there's no way they would be able, under this scenario that we're talking about, to continue to be independent.
And I think it also would eliminate the UCFs and the Boise States from being in a national conversation. When every single real football person knows, yes, Alabama and Boise State do not deserve to be in the same conversation. Boise State does great at what they do, but they are not on the same level as Clemson or Alabama or Ohio State. So UCF can run off 12 wins, but yes, are they going to beat USC and Oregon and Texas and Oklahoma and all these true blue bloods and powerhouses? No, they're not.
You agree that the networks, ESPN, Because, I mean, ESPN was basically sued, right? I mean,
are they colluding?
Are they colluding?
Of course they are.
Are they driving this?
They want to see a whoever.
They want this to be the ESPN college football league.
Right. Whoever, you know, gets this tier A network contract will drive the college football dollars all to themselves. So, of course, ESPN is trying to make this happen. ESPN owns the SEC network.
Mm-hmm.
So they are the logical players to get teams in the SEC and change it to the ESPN top 20 or tier A college football playoff or whatever they're going to call it. They should make that happen. If I'm an ESPN, I'm trying to make that happen.
So under your tier system, CU is what?
Unfortunately, they're tier C.
Tier C?
Yeah, with a chance to move because there's movement, as I said, between the
conference. They are a tier C. I thought you were going to say tier 2, but you're saying tier C. So there's the first 20, then there's the second 20. They're in the third 20?
Unfortunately, yes.
How about CSU?
It depends on how big we make tier C, but either C or D. I know, and come on, I'm a Colorado football guy. So there's no anti-CU bias or anti-CSU. No, it's just the practical realities of the situation in college football right now. I've called games at Alabama. I've seen former pro coaches who coached me are analysts at Alabama. They took that job over another job so they could be an analyst, not a coach, an analyst at Alabama. When you have 12 of those guys, how can CSU compete with that?
Mm-hmm.
Not a paid coach, 12 paid analysts.
Wow. So I saw a lot of this over the weekend, the idea, hey, this is good news for CSU because now they have a chance to perhaps make a move, make a leap to the Big 12 or a leap to the Pac-12, but they could be joining, they could be leaping onto a sinking ship is what they could be jumping onto.
Unless the SEC is calling, or the Big Ten, or the Big Ten is calling, I think that indicates where you are as far as a national perception.
Yeah, so college basketball, take a step back, because college football is still, what is ultimately most important for Kansas football is more important than what's important for Kansas basketball.
Crazy as that sounds.
Right?
Yes. Rock chalk, but crazy as it sounds.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Such is the way of college football and the money that is driven by college football and being able to be part of one of those conferences or tiers that you're talking about. Yeah, we're heading that way. I thought we were heading that way anyway, but this whole Texas-Oklahoma thing just accelerated it rapidly.
Yeah, they were talking, the Big 12 was talking about trying to bring in Louisiana Lafayette.
Yeah, see.
And La Tech.
No.
That's a sinking ship. That's not, the arrow's not pointed up there.
I saw this when I did some work for the Mountain West Network for several years. That conference relied upon BYU and Utah. The moment that they left the Mountain West, it didn't matter how they scrambled. It didn't matter who they, everybody they were bringing in was a lesser program than the ones that they lost. And they were just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. So the same thing is going to happen with the Big 12. Once you've lost Texas and Oklahoma, you're done. There's nobody you're going to add. So now you have to look at it. If I'm a Kansas, if I'm a Baylor, I can't try to make it work with a reconfigured Big 12. I got to be looking to get out too.
Absolutely. So that's where the money is.
Yeah, that's why it's the only ones that are safe. And I thought the Pac-12 would be safe. When we jumped into this conversation, I thought the Pac-12, because they represent the West Coast, and because the West Coast is still so prolific when it comes to population and athletes and markets and everything like that, that they would be immune, that they'd sort of be able to be out there on their own while everything east of the Rockies was a free-for-all. But the way you laid it out, if I'm USC...
If you're Washington, which has been one of the more consistent programs.
Where
in the
do I want to be?
Why would I want to tie my be you know, dragging Oregon State along.
Right.
Or Arizona.
Right.
Get me out of here and give me where the money is.
Yeah. And if that means, hey, West Coast kids, we're going to pack you up on a Thursday, and you're going to travel east, and you're going to have to play a game on ESPN or ABC at 11 a.m., noontime, Tuscaloosa time, but it's USC and Alabama on ESPN or ABC.
If that's where the money's at.
That's where the money's at.
Then that's where the kids will go.
Wow. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So, I think we're going there.
Yeah. You know,
and you know what?
5 years we'll see the formation, but 10 years this will be the reality.
And I'll be curious. I want to get people's thoughts on this. I know we got tons of college football fans listening. Ramelsaw.com 303-713-1043. This, the way you lay it out, it feels like this is inevitable. I wonder how people feel about it.
I think their feelings.
I'm not really bothered by it.
Upon their first feelings are going to be, you know, a little bit of, you know, oh, I don't want that to happen. You know, how, where these rivalries go. You know, obviously there's tradition in some of these, you know, geographic conferences, but I played in the Big 8. Then it became the Big 12.
Yeah.
You know, so that's when you started losing me. And when the Big 10 had 14 teams and the Big 12 had 10 teams, all that started going out the window. And yeah, really now I think you have to simply just look at the realities of the situation. And as a CU fan, would I want to be in Tier A, but be in the bottom, you know, two or three teams in Tier A? No, I'd rather win Tier C and be competing there and build my program up so maybe we can become a Tier B kind of team. That feels better than losing all the time in Tier A.
I mean, it's wild. We're talking about Tier A, Tier B, Tier C instead of Big 12, SEC, ACC. But as a Syracuse guy, I grew up, everything was geography-based rivalries. And they made sense. And the moment they moved to the ACC and suddenly they're playing Florida State, they lost me. I mean, they've been in the ACC for several years now, and I still haven't warmed to it. Still haven't warmed to it. And I'm sure there are plenty of CU fans out there that still haven't warmed to the idea of CU and Oregon State.
Right. And who created this rivalry with CU in Utah that feels so contrived?
Right,
and fake?
Exactly. So, you know what? Once they went down that road, they sort of lost me with the whole idea of conference affiliation and conference loyalty. Hey, make it a free for all. And if all of our conferences get replaced by Tier A, Tier B, and Tier C, so be it. At least I'll be seeing really good football within those tiers. You know what I mean?
And I think that's what we, as football fans, we don't just want more football. We want more competitive football. Football that's compelling, that we're interested in. And that doesn't come from geography. That comes from finding other schools that have the same kind of funding, the same, you know, the same ability to pay their players, the same kind of facilities. That's so they're all getting the similar athlete. That's what we're down for.
Some reaction. Chad, when you say USC dragging Oregon State, dragging Arizona State, they're also dragging CU, right? You'll admit that. Begrudgingly.
CU has struggled since he moved to the Pac-12.
CU's been dragged.
I will say that.
CU's being dragged. Somebody said Brian in Johnston. Johnstown says, what does that mean for programs like Boise State?
You get the chance to choose Boise State where you think you, I mean, obviously there needs to be some kind of a process to get in Tier A, Tier B, or Tier C. But once you're in that tier, do you want to move out of this tier? It's going to take some funding and some money to do that, to get to that level of the next tier. So should Boise State be in Tier A? No, they can't compete with those teams in my mind.
Well, but this will answer the question, won't it, about the Boise States and the Central Floridas? Here you go. Okay, yeah. I'll tell you what. Based on what you've done, you're going to get a seat at the big boy table. Come out and prove week after week in Tier A that you belong.
Yeah.
We'll find out, won't we?
We will quickly.
We are fixing to find out, as Gary Kubiak
yes,
would say.
And they will be slotted down to the next tier because it's a great talk show topic, but the reality is that Ohio State will crush Boise State.
Right. This texter says, your guy's picture of the future of NCAA football has removed everything I loved about college football. The history and rivalries is what makes it special. But my point to the texter is, hasn't that train already left the station? I mean, for years it was see you in Nebraska, see you in Texas, see you in Oklahoma. That's been replaced by see you in Oregon State.
Yeah.
See you in Cal. That's dead. I mean, you're clinging to a fading, if not dead, model.
But
I mean, there's still some
certain rivalries will still
Big Ten rivalries still exist. Michigan, Ohio State, yeah. But let's face it, that they're going away.
Yeah, Auburn, Alabama, they're both going to be in the in Tier A, yes. SEC. Texas, Oklahoma, the Red River rivalry shootout showdown. They keep changing the name, trying to remove the gunplay from it. That's still going to exist because they're going to be in the SEC. Stanford and Cal, they'll probably be, you know, some Tier C programs battling out, still having their in-state rivalry. So some of these rivalries will still exist, but others have to go away. Washington and Washington State, while it's can be competitive, the Apple Cup. Mm-hmm. The reality is Washington is just so much further ahead as a program.
Well, your idea of these tiers, which are fascinating, but I think you're right on. Yeah, you're still going to have the rivalries, but they will only be there within the context of what's best for the tier.
Yes.
Tier A, Tier B. You will not build conferences or tiers based around these rivalries, these geographical rivalries.
Right.
They may happen by happenstance.
Right.
But that won't be the reason to go out and build these conferences.
No, it won't be. And, you know, I suppose you could have one non-conference game on the schedule. So if you choose to, if you're Washington, play Washington State to keep that going, you certainly can. But that could affect your national rankings, and you're trying to stay in your tier.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be about the tier and trying to stay, because that's where your money's coming from,
wow,
not from this rivalry game.
Wow. It's wild.
I've thought about this a number of times, and I think this is the inevitable. This is going to happen.
Yeah. Well, if you were a football fan, an NFL fan in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, and you look at the way the league is now, the changes that have happened, you'd be like, wow, I don't recognize it anymore. It's not the, you know, but people have adapted. People adapt. You know, like one texter just said, hey, feels like the whole world is upside down right now. Instead of complaining, I'm just going to adjust.
There you go. I think that's the way to be. And like, you know, there used to be 28 NFL teams. Now there's 32.
Right.
Conferences realigned. Seahawks used to be in the AFC West.
Right.
Now they're in the NFC West.
Right.
You know, I was a part of that transition.
Yep.
So if you're, as a football fan, if you're not used to change, I don't think you're really understanding what football is, because it is constant change. There's on every roster, there's, you know, a third of the roster is going to be new. Coaches are going to be new. Conferences are realigned. Rules change. Emphasis has changed. You know, it used to be a running league. Now it's a passing league. So if you're not used to change as a football fan, I don't think you've really understood football.
Yeah. You know, for years, baseball. Oh, wait a minute. You're adding a wild card? Egad! I mean, come on. It's fine. People adjust. You know, as long as you're still giving them great matchups, high profile matchups, I think that's all that anybody really cares about. So, it's a fascinating time. And I think we all knew we were heading this way, but the Texas Oklahoma just accelerated it.
Yep. I think the NIL and then that seismic move, which, you know, the reverberations and aftershocks of this move will be, you know, felt for the next 4 or 5 years.
Does Alabama continue to be Alabama?
I'm not going to. So quit asking.
No. Nick, you may need to face this. Does Alabama, if all of a sudden they're now going up against routinely year in, year out, huge programs with huge budgets, and everybody's sort of on that level playing field, does Alabama continue to dominate?
No.
Or do they, so they're sort of enjoying the big fish in a...
No, but there's 5 or 6 games every year for Alabama that are just simply not competitive.
But Alabama's competing, Tuscaloosa is competing against Starkville. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of small college towns around the SEC. But now all of a sudden they're competing against Dallas, L.A., you know, Ohio State, you know, Michigan, Detroit. I mean, these big markets. Yeah. That'd be fascinating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be entertaining to watch.
Very much so.
And people would watch.
I would.
Yes, I would. So would you. Okay. All right. Good stuff. That was a great question. Good discussion. Let's jump back into the Broncos and where they are with the quarterbacks going into week two. Do we have to see a different split of the reps starting today? That's next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of Zero Down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for Zero Down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
Hey, one last quick little thought on this whole college football discussion. Are we heading towards tier A, tier B, tier C, and elimination of all the conferences and things like that? This texter says, I disagree. There are millions of fans across these smaller divisions that don't give a crap about the big time programs. Those fans will now lose their teams that can't afford to pay their players and will just move on from college football altogether. No, we were talking about this during the break. What does this mean for the idea of a Wyoming, an Air Force, or some of these smaller programs, CSU? Let me ask you, Chad, when Colorado holds their high school football championships, you got a 5A winner, you got a 4A winner, you got a 3A winner, you got a 2A winner, you got a 1A winner. Do you think the school that wins the 1A or 2A championship is not celebrating when they've been crowned a state champion because they're like, well, it doesn't matter because it's not 5A or 4A. No.
No.
Their players are enjoying it. The town is celebrating. They're state champions.
Right.
So why can't the same thing apply if you're Wyoming and Air Force or CSU and you find yourself in Tier 4? Who cares? Go out and win Tier 4.
Crush it. Be a Tier 4 champion. You know, every year the winner of the NIT, they celebrate and they cut the nets down too.
All right, let's not go crazy.
They do though.
I know, but it's the NIT.
And they are not one of the top 68 programs who got invited to the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And it's a little bit different because in my scenario, you didn't play the regular season and then get slotted into this second tournament. You played your games against everyone else at your same tier level.
Yeah.
So it's even a better situation and even more to celebrate. We won the championship in teams that have the same kind of funding,
yeah,
the same amount of facilities and coaches and all these other things that really differentiate the top of college football from the rest of the college football scene. So, of course, Alabama and Ohio State should be up there because they dedicate money and resources to that. But for Wyoming and Air Force, it wouldn't be a fair competition for them to be in that tier. Being your tier 3 or tier 4, win that championship against like teams and be super proud of what you've accomplished.
Yeah. I have no problem with it. I'll be heading out to Broncos after we're done here. Heading into week 2. By all accounts, Drew Locke has the slight lead. I would call him the leader in the clubhouse. He's the leader in my clubhouse right now. I don't think he has a dominating lead, but I think he's got the lead heading into week 2. If you're Vic Fangio, do you have to, for the benefit of the evaluation, maybe also just for the benefit of keeping things fresh for your team, do you have to change the way that you're doling out the reps this week, as opposed to being more of a 50-50 split between Bridgewater and Locke, still finding some reps, why, for Brett Rypien? Should it be, hey, today, Drew, you're getting 60% of the snaps, Teddy, you're getting 30, Rypien, you're getting 10. That equals 100, right? 60-30. Yeah, right.
Yes, there it goes. Is. Uh-huh. 100.
And then tomorrow, Teddy, you get the 60. Drew, you get, is it, should that be the mindset this week?
If I were a coach, that's what I would try to pull off.
Yeah.
That makes the most sense to me because, again, with the 12 plays in the period and my starter gets 8 of those plays, now I get a better sample size and it's more difficult for a player to leave the meeting with his quarterback coach. And a lot of times the quarterback's coaches will show the quarterbacks the plays in the meeting. Hey, in this red zone period, we've got these plays. In this short yardage period, we've got these plays. And our third and long situation, we've got these plays. Okay, well, there's my 4 plays. Let me go over those in my head. Let me talk to my receivers. Let me get all this kind of pre-scripted out. When you've got 8 plays in a period, you can't do that. It's literally you out there, and you have to perform in that situation. So I think this is going to be to move it to what your scenario you're painting, it's going to be a better and deeper evaluation tool. And I think it allows you, from a coaching standpoint, to roll in a couple different teams of receivers. Now we can see Teddy with 1s, 2s, and 3s in one period. So it's not just one guy, first 4 plays, in with the 1s. Now the other guy comes in for the next 4 plays. Now he's with the 2s. When you're in there for 8 plays, I can roll in different receivers. And I can roll in, you know, first-string tight ends with second receivers just to get a look at those guys. It gives you, again, a broader, more cohesive evaluation tool when your quarterback gets the chance to take longer series of reps within one period.
And doesn't it help your defense, too? I would think as a defensive player, this going back and forth between, hey, one snap, one series, it's Teddy, then it's Drew. That's not the way it's going to work for a defense on Sunday.
No.
On Sunday, you're out there against an offense. One quarterback, one set of receivers and tight ends and everything. I would think for the benefit of this defense, which we're counting so much on, that they need some continuity with who they're going up against. Yes? No?
I'm not seeing as much benefit of that as I'm seeing from the coach's evaluation side, because typically the first offense goes against the second defense, first defense goes against the second offense. But at the end of practice, when they have the team period, a lot of times that is the only true ones-on-ones period that is part of, you know, almost every practice. There can be a one-on-one short yardage scrimmage thing or a one-on-one, you know, situation during the week. But almost every practice, the last period of practice, the team period is one-on-one. So if it's going to be 8 plays, then we get a chance to see whoever's day it is go 8 plays against the first defense. That's going to be a more telling evaluation instead of, you know, seeing one guy with a couple of plays with the ones, another guy with a couple of plays with twos. Well, then how do we evaluate this? Now we can put on 2 team periods back to back. Day 1 was Teddy. Day 2 was Drew. 8 plays against the first defense. Who looked the best? It gives you a much cleaner evaluation process.
Coming up, the biggest development of the weekend that had nothing to do with what the Broncos were doing on the field. I'll explain next. Doing a great job. By the way, folks, as we get set for preseason to start, Chad will be calling the second preseason game in Seattle. Bit of a homecoming for you.
Yeah.
You know who you're calling the game with?
Yes, I do. Anesh from ESPN.
Who?
Anesh.
Anesh. Okay. So Greasy and Levy will do games 1 and 3.
And Anesh and I will have game 2 in Seattle. And, okay. You know, I think I'm stoked about it because of this quarterback battle. And I think that will be perhaps the most telling of all things during this whole process.
So you're enjoying the quarterback battle. The reason I bring that up is that I was encouraged to see that the attendance on Saturday was listed at about 2,500. Which, after the first day, when they announced that there was like 850, there were not 850 people there. I was a little worried. You know, with all the losing over the last few years, the quarterback situation, a revolving door at the position, is Bronco fever not dying, but, you know, has it lost some of its oomph?
Yes. 20%? No. I'd say maybe 10%.
Yeah.
And it has a chance to roar right back with, you know, if they find a way to win a couple of these preseason games and get some momentum going, and one quarterback emerges, and there's a sense that there's going to be a guy, the fans here are just so loyal.
Yeah.
It's an amazing fan base.
It really is. So loyal.
Yeah. I think the Broncos really have been spoiled as an organization by the loyalty of the fans here. You know, think about these last 5 years. People still show up.
Yeah.
I mean, we as a radio station, if we don't talk Broncos, people tune out.
Yeah.
And there's other great sports and teams and organizations in this city. So to that point, I mean, that shows you how passionate they are. We can't even get a word in about something else without, you know, the numbers dropping here.
That's, yeah, 75,000 will still be there. The season ticket waiting list will still stay 100,000 strong. Nobody's going anywhere. The TV ratings will still be 40, 50% of the TVs on at that time will be watching the Broncos game. So it doesn't matter. But that one struck me a little bit when they were only for the first day of camp, you know, the first day of camp, there were so few people. I get it. You know, there's people working and all that kind of things, but yeah, you see shots from other camps around the league and they got people there. They got lots of people there.
I think there's a bit of a drop in the enthusiasm level. And I think it would show up if you were to, you know, calculate, you know, jersey sales and things like right. that. I think that all shows up. I think the lack of success, the ownership situation, and, you know, is there a quarterback to be excited about? Mm-hmm. All three of those things have chipped away. And if things aren't rectified sooner than later, we could see another.
Yeah, I think what you're getting is and this speaks to the sophistication of the fan base, is the idea that, look, you got my support, okay? I'm still going to be in my seat. I'm still going to pay for my seats. I'm still going to be watching the games. But what you guys have done over the last 5 years, you've kind of put me in a position where I'm sitting back now saying, you have to prove it to me now.
Yeah.
Okay? You have my loyalty. But it's not so unconditional that I'm still going to move my schedule around and move heaven and earth and take a family vacation just so I can come out and watch you guys practice for a few days.
Right. That's the difference. That's not 10% difference.
Yeah, you have not done enough to get that from me.
Yeah, it's more than just a 10% decline in jersey sales. Even the most fervent fan has a little bit, like 10% less enthusiasm. He still wears Broncos stuff. He just didn't go out and buy all new Broncos stuff.
Right.
This year.
Right.
He still has the Bronco license plate.
Right.
So he's still down and loyal and supportive, but all the extras, not as easy to make happen.
Okay, this is the text of the day.
Okay.
And it's done at your expense, but this is good.
Okay.
So what you're telling me is that Seattle game is going to be done by the Tier 2 broadcast team.
Oh, fair enough.
That's good.
Clearly.
That's good.
You know, because if Levy and Greasy were available, they would be doing the game.
That's Alabama.
Yes.
You're Tier 2. You're...
Son of a dug in like an Alabama tick.
You know, you're...
Michigan State. I'm Iowa.
Iowa. Yeah.
It's a good, solid program, top to bottom, but just not at the
top.
You're
UCLA, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
I recognize my status here. You know, I didn't say, whoa, Nine News. You didn't call me about games 1 and 3. No, I said, heck yeah, I'll do that game.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
That's right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Hey.
Send me the media guide. I'll be prepared.
Maybe I'll be regulated afterwards, but I'm moving back up for a little bit.
Okay. Lou Gehrig, you know, Wally Pipp, that whole thing's a story for a reason.
All right.
Who knows? This could be my shot.
Another text. You think local fan excitement isn't affected by the majority of negative local media? Half the fan hosts are more anti-Broncos than a Chiefs radio station would be. Whoa.
The anti-thought when we present reality is always one of the funniest things to me from the listeners on this station. Just because I present a reality take does not make me anti. I do not hate the Broncos. I do not wish them poor things. But just because I can't say Drew Lock is a top-tier quarterback does not make me a anti-Bronco guy.
By the way, they deserve to be viewed in an anti-way. Since starting the 2016 season 4-0, the halcyon days of Trevor Siemian and Gary Kubiak. Since starting 4-0 that season, the rest of that year they went 5-7, 5-11, 6-10, 7-9, 5-11. I think they've deserved the anti-talk, okay? They deserve the commentary about them has been consistent to what the record has been. Now, if you want to listen, the only commentary you want on the Broncos is 13-3 talk for a 5-11 football team. You're not going to get that here. And the beauty of this fan base, and it's supported by the ratings that this station has, is that you're not interested in Homer radio. You're not interested in blue and orange rimmed tinted glasses radio coverage talk of the Broncos. You want it real. Now, some of you view it as being anti-Bronco. I think it's just real Bronco talk. That's what it is. And the majority of you, and by the way, I love the texter. You know, we get your phone numbers when you text us. Dude, you text us every single day. So clearly the anti-Bronco talk hasn't driven you irreparably away.
The Broncos, previous to the last 5 years, have set such a high standard that this situation, I think, somehow confuses people. Reality is, yes, you've been 5 years without a postseason, and the expectations are so high because of the high standard that was set by the Broncos. You and I didn't walk in here and demand that some C-level team perform to an A-level. We've seen this organization be an A-level team. We've seen them win Super Bowls. We've seen them be the tops of the league. They're one of the most winningest organizations, not just in football, but in all of professional sports. So when they have a five-year run like they've had now, to point out the stark difference between their best winning ways and where they are now does not make us anti-Bronco.
LOL, Evans. I'm not a hater, but I'm a hater because they deserve it. Oh, I'm not a hater. I'm a realist because they deserve it. How about that? Evans would be selling used cars without the Broncos. Fair point. Evans, you're a pom-pom-toting Orange Crush-chugging cheerleader. What? Who is the one that was labeled an Elway hater for several years?
The text line is usually good for a laugh.
Ben has the audio to prove it about being an Elway hater, right?
I hate Elway with my heart. Yeah,
you got hate in your heart. Let it out, man.
Clearly being me.
Let it out.
You guys are fanboy radio. Wow. Have you been listening to this station for the last several years? We're fanboys?
Ooh, man, I love it.
Man.
I love it.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, good job. You're back tomorrow.
Yes, I am.
All right. Hopefully I didn't drive you off.
No.
Hopefully the texters did not drive you off.
5:07 was the alarm this morning. Let's see if I can push it to 5:09 tomorrow.
How
about new?
The last time you did this was for three mornings, I think it was, and you ended up pushing it like a full... the third day, wasn't it like a full 6 minutes?
Yeah.
You slept in an extra 6 minutes?
Yeah.
I think you can just go right to that.
No,
I'm challenging you to go right from 5:07 to 5:13.
I wasn't living in a different spot then. So now I'm in an apartment and, you know, I got to get the lay of the land before I start taking risks like that.
So 5:09?
5:09 tomorrow.
Two more minutes. Those 2 minutes. Hey, as anybody who gets up that early in the morning knows, 2 minutes makes a difference. Trust me. All right. Thank you very much. We got Sandy and Nate Jackson coming your way next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.